This is the April 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, and Mike Zuzula, GlobalComResearch.com. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find it online anytime you'd like to listen to on demand or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Just look for Commodity Week. This week, we'll start our discussion with Matt Bennett. He was in the field, so I talked with him separately from the other two. I called him while he was planting corn and asked him just to tell me a little bit about how he saw this week's USDA reports.
Yeah, I mean, the USDA report is an interesting one for sure. Typically, April's kind of a blasé, boring report. Most people are just coming off the high of the March 31st report, focusing on planting. You know, and then we all know that the May report is typically a big deal. And so that's when you get your new balance sheet, your new numbers. And so this year didn't disappoint. I mean, it was a typical April WASDE. But the thing that I think maybe turned some heads is that, you know, the USDA essentially had, a job, in my opinion, to at least kind of address these quarterly stocks numbers that we got March 31st. And, you know, it sure didn't look like they did so. Now, as I always say, and you've heard me say it before, Todd, I don't want their job. I'm not picking on them. I was a little surprised that we didn't see maybe some minor revisions as far as demand and then carryouts were concerned as far as U.S. balance sheets for both corn and soybeans. And so I think moving forward, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see kind of how May is handled, because there's no doubt that you know, this May report could be, a really interesting one. But I guess my personal opinion is that, your new crop balance sheet is going to change significantly and your old crop balance sheet could tighten. So I'll be very interested to kind of see how that goes.
If the United States Department of Agriculture does not tighten the old crop balance sheet for either corn or soybeans, does that tell you that demand has trickled away?
Potentially you would think, but at the same time, Todd, I mean, you got to remember that, that's not what quarterly stocks told us. You know, that's not what basis has told us. That's not what spreads have told us. And so, you know, if we're trying to figure out the market, typically the best way to do so, at least, you know, the way that I was brought up being in a family with a grain elevator business, is that watch the spreads, watch basis, and it'll tell you just how much demand there is out there for corn, soybeans, whatever it is we're talking about. And it's no secret that this is a very strange year, you know, in that we had a major issue out west where there's a ton of usage, of course, of corn, whereas in our part of the world, we had all kinds of corn. It's just a lot of this Illinois corn is headed to destinations it typically doesn't head to, in a large fashion. So it's kind of upset the apple cart, so to speak. But again, basis and spreads tell me, you know, that we're in a pretty tight situation, and I don't think demand is completely gone.
When you look into new crop, what does it tell you about marketing that crop and how a farmer should be thinking about it as they're putting it in the ground?
Yeah, I know, Todd, like you're probably, I'm sure you're aware that we've been awfully aggressive this year, more aggressive than you've probably ever seen me in my career as far as selling ahead of time, or at least locking in. The reason for this, and I'm not saying it in hindsight, because the thing is that we still have historically profitable prices. But the way that we've looked at this market all along is that you have a couple straight years pushing 2.5 of really good commodity prices, and typically you don't get that third year. It's just not something that we typically see. And so we know that extremely high prices typically cure extremely high prices, and that's kind of what our expectation has been. We've been watching the balance sheet, you know, potentially flip-flop from a very tight situation to one in which we're not tight at all, and we've just been very cautious as to make the assumption that we're going to stay in this $6-$7 corn range. And so I guess what I think producers need to be thinking about is, hey, if I am getting the corn in the ground early and I can lock myself in a worst case scenario, I want to stay awfully flexible, because, you know, a spring like this, whenever things are going really smooth and it's dry and we have a really good opportunity to get a great stand early in the year. Reminds me a lot of a 2012 type year. I know we're supposed to be trending towards an El Nino, and that doesn't bode with well with the 2012. But you know, by all means, I want to stay flexible, but locking in a worst case scenario, because there's a very good chance, a very good possibility. If you talk to, you know, some of the weather folks, Eric Snodgrass was on our fundamental webinar on Monday afternoon, and you know, he agreed that this year is a very good opportunity for a trend line type yield if we continue heading towards an El Nino. I believe he said 14 out of 17 years whenever we've gotten to an El Nino that we've had above trend line yields. And with trend line being 181.5, a person's got to understand what that means if we plant 90 plus million acres, because that's a totally different balance sheet than what we've been dealing with.
Now, the folks that are listening to us that are in the northwestern Corn Belt are going to say, hey, wait a second, I have not had a planter in the field yet. I've still got some snow maybe on the ground, or I've got flooding, and this does not look that good. And I don't know whether Prevent Plant is going to be an option for me or not, but it has been in years past. Do they have to think about this differently than those in the eastern Corn Belt?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a totally different situation. We know that, you know, one of the big concerns, I guess, right now, when you stop and look at what U.S. production might look like is, you know, what are we going to see as far as Prevent Plant out of the northern plains, upper Midwest? We know, obviously, there's been a ton of snowpack in that part of the world. Then you turn around and you have really good heat come in, and all of a sudden, we're melting this snow as fast as we can possibly melt it. So, you know, the thing for me is that if I'm in that part of the world, I'm certainly going to have to pay close attention to what is going to work best for me. I guess overall, if they do get the snow melted and they get the flooding under control and out of the way, you know, within the next couple of weeks, then you could still get a crop planted in that part of the world, still have a chance of having a decent crop. And so I know that it's not ideal to have the situation that they've been in, but with the environment changing and with it looking like we're finally going to start to see, other than North Dakota, you know, a little more seasonal temperatures and maybe a little better opportunity than what we saw before, I still think that you could get 90 million plus planted. And again, if you get transitioned to an El Nino, you got to understand why the worst case scenario type marketing strategy makes sense. Because again, you know, if 550 is my worst case deal, boy, there's a lot of years I'd have given anything for that.
Now, I know that when you're in the tractor cab that you can be very busy, but there can also be a lot of time to think about the agronomics, about your farm. What do you think producers should be putting at the top of the list on the tractor cab thought process this spring?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know that I've put some thought into that because I've talked to several growers about it already. And I think that we're in a bit of a I do think there's some hope and some optimism, you know, for decent prices to be around for a while here, you know, especially with some of the discussions on some renewable fuels, whether it's sustainable or renewable diesel, either one. But I do think that, you know, we need to understand that our balance sheet could change quite a bit, you know, for both corn, more so, and even for soybeans. If we end up having a really good crop this year, I mean, we got to understand how that all works. And so, you know, how can we become more efficient? You know, we need to I guess, get ourselves out of that mindset that 2020, 21, and 22 type markets are going to be around forever, because those were the types of years where you could sit around and wait to market until the end of the year and come out smelling like a rose. And I'm just not so sure that that's what we're going to see here this year.
Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. He was in the planter cab when we had our discussion, so we talked to him separately from Mike Zuzulo and Dave Chatterton. Mike is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Dave with Strategic Farm Marketing. I asked the two of them to give me a list of items they wanted to discuss for the program. We started with Mike.
Well, I think the big thing is post-report sentiment in the market, Todd, and the divergence with the soy complex, whether that can hang in there like it has been the past, you know, several weeks. And then I think we should probably talk about those record highs in the cattle so people know what we're looking at.
And Dave Chatterton, on your list?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, we're past the report now. The focus is certainly going to be on what's what the planting outlook here for the row crops is here. We got, I think, two different, very different, you know, situations here between what's happening in the Midwest, or what's starting to happen at least in the Midwest, and what we see the prospects for, let's say, the Northwest Corn Belt with some snow still on the ground and what looks like a slow start to planting in a very prevent plant sensitive type of an area. And beyond that, we've continued to see some downgrades in this Argentine, you know, corn and soybean crop. When we look at that in a holistic way, and we take a look at where that crop now is, even with a record Brazilian crop, you look at year-on-year soybean production or soybean supply, and really not a lot different from last year at a time when we see the Chinese demand starting to heat up. Now, granted, not all that demand is coming to the U.S., but in the whole, it looks like demand is picking up at a time that supply is staying stagnant, and we have not seen the prices respond to that in a big way, at least as yet.
Well, let's begin with the USDA report, Mike Zuzlo, the WASDE World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate for April. It was a very soft report, not many changes, although the trade was expecting some changes. What was their sentiment as they came out of it?
Well, I think they felt as though they were correct on keeping the bull spreads very active. And we have seen, even with some slippage in the futures markets, especially corn and bean futures, in back and forth price action, we've seen the basis come in and really support us for the most part, Todd. And I think that does have a lot to do with the report, because the report confirmed the tightness of the old crop supplies, and it also confirmed the tightness of the new crop corn and new crop wheat supplies. I think that then goes back to, you know, what we were thinking about after the acreage and stocks report. So the fact that we're still carrying almost a $2 May-November bean spread and a 90-cent May December corn spread, those are valid numbers. And having said that, with that report in the rearview mirror, what we saw on Thursday in my mindset was kind of the culmination of the report, kind of closing its books with the idea that, okay, the weather opened up, the export sales didn't look so good, and the bean and corn spreads went from being very firm in the first half of the day to then giving way in both cases after lunch, and after that new GFS model came out and showed most of the central and eastern corn belt looking at very little precip for the next 7 days. So I think that spread in the May versus the Dece, May versus the Nova, is a really good indicator for producers as to whether they want to hold their old crop corn and beans and try and get some type of elevated rally led by either the outside markets or the wheat, or if those spreads start to collapse, and that would signal we're going back to a carrying charge market. And that's when, like we did in soft red wheat, that's when the wheels came off the bus.
Well, I'll stay with you for just a moment, and then Dave, I want you to jump in on this, because most of the elevators have now moved to the July contracts. Well, the cash price hasn't changed that much. It does change the values of the spread quite a bit as you look at the July-December or the July-November. Does that tell you anything about which direction this marketplace is headed?
No, but I think it does, Todd, give you a really strong inclination, at least in my opinion, that the May delivery is going to be extra important. And it will be in a time period where the trade will have expected that the 92 million acres that USDA gave us on the acreage base for corn is a lot more realistic today in the trade's mind because of the weather pattern. But as you get into the delivery at the end of April for May, if we're not in that same assured place mentally or sentiment-wise, I think corn still has some significant upside, and the May be showing that when we get into the deliverable stocks.
Dave Chatterton, how do you see these spreads?
Yeah, I mean, very similar, Todd. I think, you know, one of the big takeaways, I think, from the USDA report, as you said, you know, pretty much a sharply neutral report, not a lot for traders to work with, particularly on the bullish side of the column. And I think, you know, we had expected the USDA to take the March 31st stocks data and really incorporate that. And what they did instead was punt that, I think, until later in the year. And you know, as you guys have talked about, we're getting a clear indication in the action of these spreads. We'll just call it a dollar in old crop, you know, in May D's corn, almost $2 in the beans, or $2 plus in the beans at times, you know, tells us a story here. And if you take the USDA at face value on their March 31st report and kind of imply that into a stock situation, and the combined, let's say, U.S. corn, bean, and wheat stocks this year are about 860 million you know, bushels below where they were a year ago at this time. And that's definitely being reflected in cash basis bids, definitely being respected in the strength that we're seeing in the inverses and in the spreads here. And the USDA, again, chose not to address that and kind of take that down the road. So truing that up, I guess at some point in the future, we're going to, I guess, have to reckon with that in terms of what it means for new crop carryout. And, you know, Mike mentioned that the $92 million in terms of you know, being more optimistic on that. And I guess optimistic is a good word, but I still think that's a very high bar for the U.S., you know, corn number to get to in terms of what we're looking at in that Northwest belt. And right now the trade, you know, wants to focus on, I'll call it the 80% that looks like it's going to get planted in a timely manner and be off to a decent start here in the core of the Midwest. I think that 20% in the Northwest corner where it's wet, where there's still snow, where it's cold, where they're not really even close to turning the tap in terms of field work. And, you know, that's going to be the determining factor of how close we can get to that 92 million and what the yield aspect may be or prospects may be towards those acres.
You know, one of the things that Dave reminded me of through his comments was the difference between the cash price in South America versus where we're looking in this corn versus soybeans and specifically Brazil. I've noted that the Brazilian corn price has jumped about $20 a ton just in the last week and a half. It's only about $10 or $15 a ton below our price right now at the Gulf. But the Pacific Northwest soybean price here is exactly $100 a ton higher than Paranagua's price right now, Todd. And, you know, with the private estimates coming out from Safras at 155 on soybean production and the CONAB number coming out really close to USDA's 154, CONAB, I think 153.6. If I read those numbers at face value, kind of like what Dave was just saying, and the report numbers are deemed correct in the trade, it seems to me there's more likelihood the soybean spread could collapse compared to the corn, just given our major competitors out there, especially if you throw in Argentina.
Is this a sentiment that you agree with?
Yeah, generally. I mean, we're at the height of, I think, what the spread is going to be, in my opinion. You know, based on, you know, it's been such a big crop. It's come so quick. It's overwhelmed the logistical capabilities to ship it, to get it into the ports and get it out of the ports in Brazil. And with that, we've had these large discounts. And the dollar has played not a big role in that, but maybe a small role. But I think as we roll forward here, it's not a question so much of, you know, are we going to get a lot of new U.S. bean export sales? Because I think the answer to that is probably no. And we don't need them in order to hit the USDA target. We can slow down our pace and live with what we've seen. I think it's a question of the beans that are on the books. So this 4.5 to 5 million metric tons that's on the books from the U.S., is all of that going to ship, or is some of that going to get canceled and replaced or switched down to Brazil? And what we've seen so far is that, you know, Brazil beans are going into Argentina, and we're seeing the Chinese switch a few cargoes of Argentina origin back to the U.S., mostly because of quality concerns. And the drought certainly was a yield buster, but it was also a quality buster in terms of that Argentine crop. And the beans that are being purchased by China, you know, right now, at least by the government entities, are for reserve purposes, and they want a low oil bean that has some storability to it. They don't want an off-spec bean that's not going to store well or have long-term storability. So a lot of moving pieces in that in terms of the cash market and how the spreads and basis work versus how the flat price or the futures are going to work. But at some point, this inverse is going to collapse, as to Mike's point, and when it does, it will get ahead of you much quicker than you'll be able to catch it.
Mike, what did the WASDE figures say about the world availability of soybeans?
That we are not as tight as the trade was thinking. I thought that the average trade guess of, you know, 98.5 million tons for world ending stocks was being aggressive, and I was above 100 still, just because of the way USDA's been, you know, trading, kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul with production numbers in Brazil and Argentina. And it's still a very big question mark. We saw it on Thursday with the rally in the meal market. Is that due to the currency markets? Is that due to the Argentine soy dollar not working? I don't think it has to do with USDA, because Argentina's numbers, export bean number, stayed at 3.4 million plus instead of going to zero. And we out here are thinking they're going to have to import beans to crush. And then USDA turns around and in the meal commentary or meal numbers, takes the production of Argentine meal down to, and their exports down 2.5. So left us with as many, if not more, questions on the meal than answers. And so what I've told clients this week is, if we're going to get a bean market rally, and if you look at a monthly bean chart right now, we're coiling, we're putting a wedge in, and that means we're having tighter and tighter ranges from low to high. The market's, I think, getting ready to make a decision one way or the other. And if we're going to go higher, given what this cash price is versus South America, I think it's either going to be the Brazilian real, which made a one-year high against the dollar this week, or that meal market catches again. So those are the two things I'm watching for.
And do you have a timeline for how long the wait might be here? I know that's difficult, but we've got the coil in place. The charts do tell you sometimes what timing looks like.
Yeah, you know, excellent question. It is hard to tell. I will say that a couple of the big commodity index charts that have done a good job for me this year have shown only about a 5-6% movement the past 3 months as far as low to high. So I would assume that they can't keep that up for very much longer. And the option volatility is almost like we've made the crop at this point. I think the corn and bean volatility is down around 15-17%. And that's just way too low given the supply-demand figures we're talking about. So I wouldn't doubt or be surprised that the USDA gives us fresh wheat numbers in May, like the new crop wheat numbers. Their yields at 49.2 right now after the Agriculture Forum. We've got 60% of the crop dying in Kansas. Last time we saw that was back in the 90s. So if they give us new crop wheat numbers where they slash the yield, that might spur the activity in the soy complex to break higher, or the market to break one way or the other.
And would you be a willing seller of old crop on that rally?
Yeah, but I mean, this is where the technicals have done a good job. And I've told clients, you know, it's going to be hard, I think, at this point for the beans to go alone again as they get close to 15.25. If they get above 1545, 1550 area, then you've probably got something going on. And if you've dumped something out, you might want to take a quick jab at trying to buy it back for a 30 or 45 day window.
Anything to add, Dave, on old crop beans? And maybe you can talk a little bit about the new crop and what it feels like to you as well.
Timing the inverse here is going to be a pretty tough occupation. If you look at what's, I think, happened here of late, the inverse is driven out. Any stocks that have been in commercial hands have been driven out by the inverse already, and what's left to move here is in pretty tight hands. And so there's definitely the room for some of these spikes and some different things to happen. And, you know, I think you just have to take that almost day by day. But in terms of where we go with flat price or futures pricing, you know, in the next 60 days, 90 days, a lot of chair shuffling to be done. As Mike indicated, you know, we have a lot of growing season ahead of us here, and the market is, I don't know if complacent is the right word, but certainly seems to be rather low key about this. They're taking the USDA, you know, acreage and yield numbers at face value, and that acreage number in the U.S., I mean, we can get to it, but I think a lot of things have to go right, and I think the bet there is in the under. If you take, you know, 2 million acres off of that, let's just say for prevent plant, which would not be a big, you know, anything out of bounds in terms of what we typically see in the Dakotas and the northwest part of the belt. And then they've also got a yield penciled in here at 181.5, which mathematically is trend if you go back on a long enough timeline, but is also would be a new record corn yield in the U.S. if realized, and not by a little bit, by almost, you know, 5 bushels an acre. So let's just say you take 2 million acres away, you take, you know, I don't know, let's say it's a bad year and we take it down to 170, you're going to lose another, then you're talking about losing maybe 900 million bushels of production. Now, that's the worst case scenario. Don't take it as we're going there. But I think you have to consider that the trade is not really, you know, attuned to any of that type of risk at the moment, and things could change rather quickly. You know, in the meantime, I think the attitude for a producer needs to continue to be to harvest profitability where we see it. We have a lot of outside influences in our markets in terms of how they're affecting price and the dollar and inflation and interest rates and just, you know, all the things that are weighing on our market or influencing our market. And it's driven some spec money out of our market, this sideways kind of laissez-faire, go nowhere, two steps forward, one step back type of a process in the grains is really, you know, frustrated, I think, some of these investors, and they're looking for places to come back and reallocate capital. With the dollar coming down, the commodities are starting to look at least a little bit more attractive, but we need that spark to happen, and I don't think it would take a lot to get that spark to happen in the grain complex. So I think the message here is, you know, maybe not chasing breaks right here, you know, old crop or new crop, but I think you have to be ready and you have to be, you know, have a plan in place and be ready to execute on any kind of strength in the market and take advantage of that.
Mike, a couple of things on corn and coarse grains in general. The Chinese or buyers from China had been into the marketplace. They were in again this week. And then there was a note, and I don't recall where this came from, but wheat purchases by companies and China have been really strong. And they are now, I think this was actually from USDA, the world's largest importer of wheat. What difference does all this make?
Well, you know, that's interesting you bring that up because you're right. They're going to be at 12 million tons by USDA's number. And it was their world market, their grain market and trade circular. And they said that's the highest number since 95-96 marketing year. When you think about what they've been importing, I've got to think they had some significant weather problems last year, especially given that they've said that they have such an influx of the avian influenza and also the pig disease too. And I think that's where the demand side of the equation shouldn't be that good. So I'm thinking they must have had some weather issues last year and they're restocking and building up supplies. And part of that may be geopolitically as well, Todd, with a much more hardline leader and more of an autocratic mindset and planned economy. All economic decisions go through President Xi now after a major letter and change in the legislature and the Politburo was made. So my mindset is that they will continue to buy, but I think they'll be a lot more selective as time goes forward. And I wouldn't be surprised when President Lula from Brazil goes over there that he doesn't get a major trade agreement and a bunch of agriculture demand numbers and just gets rewarded with a basket full of goodies for coming over to Beijing. So that's something that I'm really, you know, nervous about from a futures standpoint. And just like Dave was talking about, continues to drive that wedge between the futures price action and the cash price action. And that's why I think that May delivery is so crucial.
On that note, wheat that is, and China, Russia as well. Does it make very much of a difference that the announcements came that companies like Cargill and others have exited Russia as an exporter of their commodities? Or does it simply mean that the infrastructure they had in place will be used by a state-owned entity and grain will continue to flow?
Both, because it'll be less transparent. We won't know what's going on, and it'll be much more like China and not understanding or knowing exactly what the figures are. And I think that that's where the USDA ag attachés are going to have to really pick it up if they can. I think on the wheat side of the equation, that news that you're speaking about, the news that Russia said the grain deal is essentially dead, got nothing in the trade. In fact, the European market continued to slide this week. And I had a really good call, a couple calls from a client in Sweden, and he said, we are getting waylaid with Polish corn right now in our feed system, and it's knocking us out. And so those newswire reports about Ukrainian corn displacing Polish corn and Polish corn going on west and on north into Europe are absolutely true based upon what I'm hearing from direct, you know, anecdotal talking points and anecdotal conversations. And so I think that's something that I certainly was not prepared to see, was a flooding of Ukrainian corn over land, essentially, and up the Danube River to the point where it's affecting the global marketplace. That came out of nowhere for me, and it's really kind of put me up back on my heels for whether we can make a seasonal low here before harvest.
And Dave, what do you see in the marketplace of interest for corn at this time?
And we had the Chinese sale again today. I mean, I guess that was split. Of course, that was split between the old crop and the new crop crop years here. But certainly, you know, I think the demand has been okay. And when we look at what's going on in the Black Sea, their production, at least in terms of Ukraine, looks like it continues to turn down into the new year. I think their corn exports are a big question mark going forward. The Black Sea negotiations or Black Sea corridor negotiations are, I guess, looking a little bit less likely here as we move forward, and Russia takes a little more of a hardline stance. That agreement is set to expire on May 17th, and you know there'll be negotiations ongoing between now and then to see what happens. You know, I like the sense here that you know that that we're coming in a situation where I think people assume that demand is probably not going to overperform. Our sources indicate China will be a good buyer of corn in the second half of the year. It doesn't look like the Safrinha corn crop out of Brazil is going to be available until July. And I think we can be competitive in that sense. So, ethanol demand is a little bit more of a question mark. Feed and residual, we'll save that for the USDA. We already had the stocks discussion, but it seems the bet there could be at the over. So in our mind, or in my view, Scott, Todd, I think we could see these carryout numbers, continue to shrink up a little bit as we go forward, whether it's a combination of acreage and yield or whether it's a combination of demand or all of those factors moving to it. I think the demand tightens. The question is, when will the trade recognize that, and will it be too late? I think weather is still going to be the king of futures trading here in the near term, and what our performance is in terms of planting progress and early yield potential.
If there is a rally sometime in May, June, July, there likely will be, based on either some weather event that doesn't allow the northwestern Corn Belt to really plant, or dry weather that might spread out of the western part of the United States, I suppose. Again, should producers who have not really marketed new crop corn and or soybeans, but let's stay with corn for the moment, we know based probably on what we saw in the grain stocks report as to the availability of old crop corn on the farm, should they take advantage of that rally at that point? And I guess I'll start with you first, Dave, and then move on to Mike.
In a simple word, yes. I think this is a year to be a little bit more defensive in your marketing and try and, take some profit off the table when you realize it. If you look at where we're at right now, especially in the December corn, Mike mentioned the coiling in these nearby or these continuation contracts. But when we look specifically at the new crop contracts, and particularly for corn, we're getting some consolidation near recent lows, and we have not been able to move very far off of that. That is a little bit concerning. That typically is action is, more of a rest stop along the way in what is a trend that ultimately wants to move lower. So I think you need to be in a position, and like I said, be ready to pull the trigger when you see those numbers come back. If we can get at the 200-day moving average right now, and December corn is, right at that 595 mark, those highs from back in early February are right in that 589 to 595 area. I think that's a very interesting area for the trade if we can get up there. But on the way, I think you need to be looking and moving your percentages along. This is a situation where if you can, use cash sales or HTAs or whatever, types of cash instruments that you want to create, a situation where you've eliminated the downside, it's very easy to come back in here and buy calls, buy call spreads, or buy option strategies that will allow you to continue to participate if we get that summer rally in that May, June, July time period that you mentioned seasonally, Todd. But the answer is yes.
I think that's a great plan. I would say also, Todd, I'd be looking at the idea that if you can get $7 cash, I think at this point in time, that's a good place to get some old crop corn let go of and have open orders. And then I think undervalue on Dease corn right now is still around 540. That's what my numbers would suggest, at least until mid, late July. And so buying back in the new crop might be a good idea. And that goes to the livestock feeder as well. I think, you're getting to the point where these cattle prices are getting high enough. Feeder cattle prices are getting high enough. We've got to watch the feed side of the equation so you don't go from a black number in profitability down to a red number just because you didn't cover your feed needs. So getting corn bought below 540 in December for, the first 6 months of this year, the second 6 months of this year, I think something you want to be really talking about and looking at.
Any final word from each of you? I'll start with you, Dave.
I mean, it's going to be an interesting summer, as it always is. Weather is going to be, is always the great equalizer here in terms of what it means to U.S. production and U.S., yield potential. So we'll let that guide us. There's a number of things working in the background that are also going to be very important. But I think the idea here is that in a market that, is under the sway of what looks like another interest rate hike, what looks like continued battle against inflation and some macro market instability, that it is that time, like I said, to be a little bit less offensive and a little bit more defensive in terms of your grain marketing and looking at your profitability levels going forward here. If we're able to get the acres in that the USDA is talking about, we are definitely going to see values leak lower here by the time we get, to late summer and into harvest. So be cognizant of where you're at on your timeline. You know, we have some time here, but you know, time is not infinite, and you know, it's always a good idea, I think, to be moving some risk off the table, particularly if you're undersold here.
And your final word, Mike?
My big final word, Todd, as I alluded to the pre-harvest wheat low, I'm still thinking that is the case. I've talked to a lot of clients out west, and the major comments are it's turning blue. The adjuster's been called out to zero out at least a third of my crop. And the other one is I have a little bit of time left. But I think we are seeing a situation develop where it's a lot like the Dust Bowl in certain areas, and we could see some zeros in a big portion of the hard red wheat belt, bringing down the whole national yield.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like, online or as a podcast. Find it at willag.org or in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzulo, GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net in Windsor, Illinois, and Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. That's sfarmmarketing.com online. He's in Champaign, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.